sit down. Go ahead. Okay, it's Monday, April 3rd, 2006. This is Ellen Norrie. I'm interviewing Professor Luther Statler for the SIUE history. I usually start by asking how you happened to come to SIU. And
it was simple. I was looking for a job. I was working in the St. Louis area, and I got tired of driving back and forth to St. Louis, and I live right on the outside of the university on the northwest side. So my wife's made an appointment, so I'd come over and interview the personnel officer, Morris Carr. And I got through interviewing him. I talked to a guy by the name of Carl Walford. Then I talked to another gentleman by the name of Gene Peebles.
Mm-hmm.
And Sunday afternoon, this is all Saturday, Sunday afternoon, I got a call saying, can you come to work Monday? Of course, I had to give the people in St. Louis a couple weeks notice, but
mm-hmm.
I replaced a guy by the name of Don Ward. He went to purchasing.
Hmm.
That was the...
And...
Let's see, I was a so-called supervisor of self-supporting services, which at the time was university bookstores, textbook rental, mm-hmm. and was supposed to have been university housing.
Mm-hmm. And this was about 1960...
I came in 1963.
63? Okay.
I think 63. Yeah, my wife told me the right year.
Okay.
January, February, March, or something
okay.
like that. But that's what basically the first job was.
Okay. And so how did it work? Was there a bookstore on each campus that you supervised?
There was a bookstore on the Alton campus, on the UCF Post campus, and the main distribution point was the old Quonset out on you know where it's at.
I know where it is. Then it was turned into a theater later?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Theater storage area.
Okay.
And that was a textbook rental, same deal, on Alton and East St. Louis. And their main storage area was the library in Atlanta.
Uh-huh.
But.
So you came in to run textbook rental in the bookstore.
Mm-hmm. And supposedly
housing.
Mm-hmm.
Was there anyone... Were there any kind of university housing for students at
that
time?
No.
Okay, I didn't think so, but
that didn't happen until quite a bit later, but I forget how long it was, but it was a few years. Of course, it was married student housing. We were supposed to be a commuter campus.
Uh-huh.
And any indication in those days, I guess, of on-campus housing was a forbidden subject.
Uh-huh.
Do you remember anything about the Sea Purge? Or did anybody tell you anything about that?
Well, not recently, because...
Okay.
Tell me about the Sea Purge.
Well, I wasn't here when the Sea Purge occurred. Anyway, he crossed paths with Morris. He wanted
mm-hmm.
to name this place, I think, Southwestern Armand Campus.
Mm-hmm.
And that only been the work about maybe a month, month and a half, an hour to graduation announcements.
Uh-huh.
And I sent the requisition into purchasing, and they ordered them. We got the right date,
uh-huh.
but we got the wrong campus. It was not the Southwestern Illinois campus.
Oh.
And we got them in, I think it was a Friday or a Thursday. We got them sent to Alton and East St. Louis. And I get a call from a guy by the name of Larry Young, who ran the general office in East St. Louis.
Uh-huh.
He says, I've never met you, you haven't been on campus long, but I think we have a problem. And he told me what it was. Well, I had no idea. But anyway, I called Gene Peebles. He says, get new ones. Fast. So I called purchasing guy by the name of Jack Darda. He had been around long enough that he was aware of what the implications
mm-hmm.
were. They said, this was Thursday or Friday. By that next Monday morning, we had brand new announcements.
Oh, my.
Only thing we have, and I guess not too many people heard about it.
Oh.
But that was kind of an interesting offshoot.
Yes. And so the new announcements had to say...
It's Southern Illinois University.
Okay.
And I guess we kind of messed up. We should have kept a bunch of the old ones, but I think they were disposed of very rapidly.
Okay.
And that's how I remember part of this sea purge.
Uh-huh.
So all this happened before I came. I wasn't aware of what was happening. And I was just getting new graduation enough.
So?
But Jack Darden, the guy in purchasing, knew just exactly what was going to happen. So.
Uh-huh.
And I guess that's where he and I first met each other.
And then you worked together?
Oh, directly and indirectly for several years. Well, when I got through with this particular job, I was transferred to East St. Louis. That was the coordinator of general office.
Mm-hmm.
I replaced Morris Carr, who went to Halton.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Lauren Young, who was in charge of the general office at the time, came up here to get the furniture arranged for the new buildings.
Mm-hmm.
So we had some switchovers, so I moved to St. Louis.
Okay. So this is about 1965?
I don't know.
Oh. Was this before the new campus opened?
I moved to East St. Louis the year that the main campus opened.
Okay, that'd be 65, 1965.
Because when I moved down, I was under the impression that I was going down there to help close the place up.
Uh-huh.
Because at the time, hey, we're moving into the new campus, we're getting out in the vault, and we're getting out of East St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, we're still in both places now.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, I replaced Morris Carr.
Okay.
And that one, I guess I maintain I ran the complaint department.
Now,
if anything went wrong, they came and contacted me, and I was supposed to take care of it. I was basically, I reported the business affairs guy on the Jim Medcalf.
Uh-huh.
But I really reported to a guy in academic affairs by the name of Bruce Thomas.
Uh-huh.
Who was at the time, I think, the vice president and provost.
Mm-hmm.
That was an interesting few years.
How long were you in East St. Louis? About
4 years.
4 years?
I think.
Till 69?
Maybe.
Okay, and then you came up, was John Rendleman the president when you came up here?
John Rendleman was the vice president, I think, when I went to East St. Louis, and yes, he was president when I came back.
Okay.
Here.
And when you came back up here, did you continue to run textbook rental?
When I went to East St. Louis, I turned textbook rental over to Jack Darda, who was and the University Bookstores, the University Center had also developed, and that went to a guy by the name of Bob Handy.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So that was... When I got moved, they got more people and different things.
Uh-huh.
But when I went to East St. Louis, I was just basically responsible for East St. Louis campus.
Okay.
And what did or did not occur down there. Said I ran the complaint department.
There were many complaints.
Oh, yeah.
About the building.
Oh, yeah, about the buildings and about the 12 o'clock noon fire alarms. I said, we're in Rock Junior High. Of course, I'm Rock Junior High.
Uh-huh.
And the... every other day, at least, some student over in Rock Junior reported a fire alarm at 12 noon. So everybody was aware of what was happening. You'd kind of check, but you basically knew where you could go to see where the fire alarm had been pulled. Then one day, Mr. Darda, who was now working for Jim Medcalf in a different capacity, he was in charge of safety. I think he was in charge of safety.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, he and Jim Medcalf came down and fire alarm went off. I was sitting there talking to him, and Jim Medcalf said, well, Luther, you got a fire, are you going to evacuate the building? I said, no, that happens at least every other day. So took him out and showed him, this is my boss again, showed him where they'd pull the fire alarm and where they got it reset. So it kind of upset him that I hadn't evacuated the building, but another story. And we were then, we were the tornado shelter center. Well, at least we had shelter areas. We had food stuff saved in for the Second World War. That's all gone right now. Canned goods and all that kind of stuff. And we had Mr. Darda came down. He had these safety signs. These are the safe areas in the building. And they had the signs all put up. And I said, Darda, they'll have those signs down in less than 24 hours. They said, no, they won't, Luther. I've used these screws that they can't get out. Well, they were down in less than 24 hours. As soon as they take them down.
Oh, my.
Mm-hmm. And another little odd incident down in East Ellis. One day I sat in the office. This is the second time I met President Morris. He came in. He said, I know I'm parked in the university parking place, but I've got some business. Can you make sure I don't get a ticket? So I made sure he didn't get a ticket. And he, whatever his business was, he took care of it and left.
But that was what other time did you meet him?
Oh, the first time I met him was when I was in the bookstore at Alton. He was up there going to some type of a meeting in the church right across the street from the campus. And we started talking, and he wanted to meet the lady who was running the bookstore at Alton. Mm-hmm. And as we left, he said, you know, everybody working for the university is important. So that was really the first time. And both of them were very informal meetings, so. But.
What did he look like?
Dr. Morris?
Yeah.
Well, he wasn't quite as tall as I was.
That's what I'm wondering.
I think a lighter build than I am.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, geez, I'd have to look at the picture and remember what he looked like. I can't remember what John Riddleman looked like.
You can't?
Mm-hmm. You know, it's been a few years.
Yes, I know.
That I retired in,
88? 88, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, and Morris had been gone a whole bunch of years, so was John.
Mm-hmm. Did you know John Riddleman?
I knew John probably as well as any employee did.
Mm-hmm.
In that when we started getting the classroom buildings 2 and 3, well, first I moved up from East St. Louis now.
Uh-huh.
I was moved into the office of the vice president provost as assistant two.
Mm-hmm.
At the time that was Bruce Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
And I replaced a guy named Paul Kunkel,
mm-hmm.
who was in charge of, quote, university space and institutional research.
Okay.
Well, a guy by the name of John Reiner took over the institutional research responsibilities, which I'm glad. But I still had space, university space, for the academic year anyway.
Uh-huh.
So I turned out to be, a lot of people call me at the time, the space czar.
Yes.
That, and space was really tight at the time.
Uh-huh.
And we scheduled in buildings 2 and 3 and Riddleman building.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see, I think then Science building. But I reviewed most all of the academic space on behalf of the VP&P.
Uh-huh.
Approved renovations for him. And I also picked up the other subsidiary duty of the salary responsibility of academic affairs due to various quirks. So I finally wound up with whole space and financial garbage.
Right. Well, I wonder why didn't the School of Education take one building of building 2 and 3 and the business school take another one?
Wasn't enough room if they wanted to.
Oh, they wanted to.
Well, they had room for social sciences.
Uh-huh.
And science and tech was crowded like the very devil, and still with fine arts.
Mm-hmm.
So it was basically a political thing that John Pond just sat down and said, business you can't have all of one. Education you can't have all of two.
Okay.
So we're going to divide part of this up. Well, as a matter of fact, in the Riddleman building, I forget who was there first, but we moved part of the School of Education into the Riddleman building.
Mm-hmm.
Dean Wiley was the dean at the time. He and I got along real well. We were the only true deans at the university. All of them else were by title.
Uh-huh.
We moved him in. Let's see. We moved in on a third floor first. and we moved part of the School of Education in, I think, second. And we had Wiley on the west side where the sun would hit him every afternoon.
And we couldn't
get him curtains for the dog on off.
Oh.
For some reason or other. And it was hot as the devil in there, and every
yes.
he drank and he moaned and he groaned and groaned. And finally one day he came up, jumped on my desk and started to take my curtains down. And I said, Wiley, those won't fit. But, you know, he's in Las Vegas now. He's still living.
He is?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, gosh,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
He's still living.
Do you ever see him? Do you ever visit him?
There was a retirees meeting, I think it was last year, that he was there.
Mm-hmm.
I think. But no, I never got to Las Vegas to see him.
Uh-huh. Well, that...
But he was kind of a character.
Yeah.
But he was the dean of the school at the time.
Mm-hmm.
The other dean I remember was Hollis White.
Uh-huh.
They used to call him the Silver Fox. He was always nibbling for space and
uh-huh.
additional money. He's passed away, though, unfortunately.
Uh-huh. And he was some fine arts.
He was dean of the school of fine arts.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I thought. Fine arts.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was another.
They first occupied the comm building.
Well, yeah, comm.
Which is now I think called the Dunham Hall or something.
Uh huh.
They should have named it after him, but that's another.
Okay.
Question or point.
Okay.
But you know, you talk about John. He knew most everybody on campus.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you were a faculty member and or even mid-level of administration, he had pictures made.
Mm.
And he would sit there and review these pictures till he got to know you.
Uh-huh.
And he'd always call you by your first name.
Uh-huh.
Except for the second time he saw me, he called and said, Luther. And I thought, geez. And he did everybody else like that.
Uh-huh.
Of course, he was a politician.
Yes.
Good politician.
Uh-huh. Good politician.
And a good president at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And remember the Paul Powell incident?
Yes.
Well, I was sitting in my office over the east end of the Redlin building, which is now the Redlin building. And he came and he said, Luther, you know, I'm almost quoting exactly like this. I didn't know that son of a bitch had all that money in those boxes. And I believed him. And it was true. Just the way he said it. And that's one of the things I remember about John.
Yeah.
He was a very likable person.
Yeah.
But then, let's see, Bruce Thomas was the VP and B at the time. Jim Corman was in the VP office.
Mm-hmm.
Jim Brown was in the VP office. Of course, Jim Brown's now passed away.
Yes.
And he was our president finally, and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
I and Jack Nard always bugged him to go find the presidency someplace else so we could change universities, but he stayed, so I guess we had to stay. But who else is up there? And Bruce Thomas, Jim Horner, Jim Brown. I think it was the only three. Well, anyway, I think John and Bruce Thomas kind of clashed a little bit. They didn't quite see eye to eye,
mm-hmm.
which happened quite often
mm-hmm.
in this place. It's not really the quite tranquil place that everybody makes believe it is, or it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
And Bruce left. Jim Comer became vice president and provost. Jim Brown, during this period of time, left that office and went down to work for the
uh-huh.
president at Carbondale.
Mm-hmm.
And he basically stayed at Carbondale.
Uh-huh.
And sometime in that period of time, that's when I took over the quote money review for academic affairs.
Uh-huh.
I basically signed off, I guess, on all personnel for fiscal
mm-hmm.
matters for the MP.
Mm-hmm.
At one time.
Now, you worked closely with Metcalf?
When I was down in East St. Louis.
Okay, you didn't work closely with them up here when you were doing...
Not too awfully closely. We, Metcalf and Jack Darda occupied the same office in the Lindeman building.
Okay.
And Jim was the budget director at the time, the comptroller, no budget director, because Arnold Meyer was comptroller. And of course, the academic affairs had the biggest budget of the institution. So Jim and I worked very closely on that one. And we basically worked together on all of the capital budget reviews and money requests too. It was kind of a combination of things.
Did you go up to Springfield to visit up with the legislature or no?
Didn't want a thing to do with it.
Okay.
That at the time, as far as I know, it was, I don't even think Jim would have messed with it too much.
Okay.
He may have. Of course, he's passed away now too.
Yeah.
You know, he may have pretty shot himself.
Uh-huh.
In a little period of time. But no, I never went to.
Mm-hmm.
Now, about the only contact I had was Springfield. it was about this place, library. They had sent through down something and wanted to know if there was a need for any additional money for various reasons. And exactly why they sent that request, we could always use money.
Yeah.
Anyway, I responded back in a direct letter to somebody up there in behalf of John Abbott, the library, that we needed, I think, about $250,000 to type of books.
Uh-huh.
And Dardis, he wrote the letter, he said, Luther, you don't even know what you're talking about, do you? And I said, not really, but neither will they. We got our money. Well, John got his money. That just shows how much money they had to waste up to Springfield.
Now, that was probably in 72 or 73.
You know,
it was before the money started to dry up, which was in kind of in the middle 70s.
Yeah, but when you say money dry up, I have to approach that word with caution later on.
Okay.
That, it all depends on the interpretation of the I want to tell you another couple of issues about East St. Louis when I was down there.
Okay.
There's one day I was sitting down there happy, free, and minding my own business, and I get this letter. It was signed by Rindeman, Ralph Ruffner, and McVicker, who was in charge of that at the time. That they were moving Catherine Dunham down from Alton.
Okay.
Well, I didn't know who Catherine Dunham was, but anyway, I made the space available. They even had the building's name where she was going to be moved, so we made sure she moved.
Uh-huh.
And she was down there about a week, and she came over to my office. She said, well, I'm ready to go to the market. I said, I beg your pardon? I'm ready to go to the market in St. Louis. Well, I said, well, I guess you can go and get your university car. Well, Marsh Carr always drove me.
Uh-huh.
And I said, I'm not Marsh Carr. And I have no intention of driving you. Well, anyway, she says, I'm going to call President Morris. And I says, okay, here's my telephone and here's his phone number. We didn't get along too awfully well.
Uh-huh.
And I again back to Dunham, Bruce Thomas. You know Butterfly McQueen?
No.
She's the gal who played in Gone with the Wind.
Oh, okay. Uh-huh.
I forget what her real name was.
Uh-huh.
Well, anyway, one Thursday afternoon, Bruce came down. He said, Luther, what are you doing tomorrow afternoon? That would have been Friday. I said, well, not too awfully much. He says, can you take somebody to the airport for me?
Uh-huh.
I said, sure. Well, it turned out to be Butterfly.
Huh.
She was slipping away from Catherine.
Oh.
So I got her to the St. Louis airport, made sure she got on. And review the academic affairs budget.
Mm-hmm.
And we gave him everything.
Yeah.
Everything added up. And that's all he could tell him. But we just didn't tell Nick everything about the budget. Then we went ahead and did what we always did. And Earl knew I was aware of all of these, quote, internal last-minute maneuvers. And I could do it almost as well as he could. Make not as fast. He's a hell of a mathematician.
Yes.
But, and they developed a few personnel problems too. But yeah, I said he was married very Machiavellian. I guess you're going to interview him so he can defend himself.
No, I'm not going to. I hadn't planned to interview him. I'd planned to write what I was going to say about him and then send it to him and then see if I could get an interview.
Oh.
No, I'm trying to interview people who did the work.
Hmm. Well, the one time he did a lot of the work. Uh-huh. Really, when his VP&T,
yeah.
That, you know, it's kind of amazing. We went to some guy who was giving us a history lesson at the university over at continuing education class one day. And whoever the guy was, he didn't know anything about it. He didn't even mention Mars. He didn't mention John. He didn't mention anybody.
Hmm.
Yeah, but anyway, all I can just get my mouth shut. Why cause a problem? But his leader, his ideal leader, was Earl.
Oh.
Anyway. But I guess that was probably.
Mm-hmm.
The hardest period of my time in the last couple of years putting up with him.
Mm-hmm. Now, did you, were you still the director of supporting services when you retired in 88?
No.
Okay.
I moved back to the School of Business.
Yes.
I was, quote, paid off.
Uh-huh.
I took a year sabbatical, then taught a year.
Uh-huh.
To get, be getting rid of.
Mm-hmm. And this is because you knew as much about the budget.
Oh, not necessarily.
Or maybe.
But that wasn't the only thing. I think Earl and I just started having too many conflicts.
Uh-huh.
And you don't have conflicts with the king unless you can kill him. And, well, as an example, I never will forgive him. I've thanked Jim Brown two or three times. Of course, Jim's passed away now.
Yeah.
Arnold Meyer. He had been working for the university and in the county department his entire career, and also the university comptroller.
Uh-huh.
Ben Quillian, who was one of the guys who replaced me.
Uh-huh.
Arnie had about 30 or 40 days before he had enough time to retire.
Uh-huh.
I think something like that. And Ben Quillian fired him.
Oh.
And no one under this, in this campus or anyplace else, can tell me that Earl was not aware of it, the way he looked like I lived to micromanage.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if it hadn't been for Don Wilson at Carbondale and Jim Brown at Carbondale, they got Arnold a part-time job up at the medical school
in
Springfield. So he had enough time so he could retire. And why he allowed Ben to do this, I have no idea.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for 30, 40 days, they could have put him on sabbatical or something.
Right.
A leave with pay.
Uh-huh.
Even a year, 6 months, no one would ever know the difference.
Right.
And, of course, Mr. Quillian, I think I understand, got his comeuppance too, that as soon as Earl left.
Mm-hmm.
One of your better deans at the time was now the retired president, was Dave Warner.
Uh-huh.
Dave and I always got along very well with each other. We had a few arguments occasionally, but not much.
Mm-hmm.
And getting back to the director of supporting services, my last job, I was down on the first floor of the Rendleman building.
Mm-hmm.
And he just came from a VP&P meeting. He said, Luther, I and all the other deans have just been told by Barbara Teeters that we're not to talk to you, period. And I said, why? He said, I don't know, but we have been informed that we are not to contact you for any reason whatsoever.
Oh, really?
But anyway.
Obviously, he was staying in contact with you.
Now, I don't know what I got. I have no idea what Teeters' problem was, but she was not one of my favorite VP&Ps. I just basically thought she was incompetent.
Uh-huh.
She probably wasn't, but I thought she was.
I never knew her. I've heard that that she was extremely disorganized.
Well, maybe this is why I'm saying incompetent.
Okay.
But
it was hard for her to move on things.
Depending, I think, on her mood, she had a fairly nice personality. Other times, she could be difficult.
Uh-huh.
But my view of the vice president and provost, she just did not fulfill the role.
Did she ever seek any advice from you on the academic budget?
No.
No?
What did you?
Any briefing or no?
Mm-mm. Well, one of the reasons she didn't, in her defense on that one, is that I probably didn't have time anyway. And Hollis White, who was the dean of the School of Fine Arts, was fairly well aware of quite a bit of the academic affairs budget. And he, to some extent, moved up and took part of my responsibility.
Uh-huh.
And another gentleman by the name of Vance Wilson, who worked in, who was a fiscal officer for all of the research grants.
Uh-huh.
He came over and worked in her office on the budget.
I see. Okay.
So in reality, there really wasn't too much of a need for her to confer with me on that.
So what did you have interaction with her about the buildings or about space?
Very little. Mm-mm. Mm-mm.
No.
I was always under the impression that she and Earl did not get along
after
a period of time. Could have been wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And I think his inability to get along with her kind of worked over into my side of the institution. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
The other gentleman, you probably heard his name, Earl Beard.
Yes, I was going to. You read my mind. I was going to ask you.
A gentleman, a scholar.
Uh-huh.
And he came up, worked in the office of the VP&B. He started reviewing the faculty hires for personnel matters and so forth. Again, I was still responsible for his fiscal area.
But
he left academic affairs and director of personnel.
I think he
retired.
Uh-huh.
Then Earl convinced him to come back, which was a great move. And he and Earl, the two Earls, got along very well with each other.
Mm-hmm.
They got along very well with each other.
Mm-hmm.
I'd call them the Bobbsey twins.
Okay.
The hallway.
Well, what did Earl Beard do after he came back?
Hmm?
He retired.
He came back in personnel again.
Okay.
And then when I, quote, got removed or left, he took over my position.
Okay.
And then when Earl Beard left, that was when I think Ben Quillian came in.
Uh-huh. Right. Mm-hmm. Ben Quillian came in.
I've got to go back. I thought of Mr. Jack Darda.
Yes.
John Lindelman. Jack loved to hunt.
Uh-huh.
And this was the day before we had gun laws and all that happy Mickey Mouse. Well, anyway, Jack had gotten permission to take off a half a day vacation to go hunting that afternoon.
Uh-huh.
Well, instead of keeping his dumb shotgun in his car, he brings it to the Rindelman building.
Uh-huh.
And he and John get on the elevator at the same time, and Jack's got this shotgun. And John just looks at him and says, "Jack, are we expecting trouble?" That was Darda for you, though. Yeah. If that's the kind of a tidbit you're looking for.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Rindelman would react like that. Earl would have went up to the ceiling.
Uh-huh.
And then, of course, you know, times change.
Yes.
You wouldn't bring a shotgun on campus now.
Uh-uh.
Not least carry it out in the open.
Now. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But Earl Beard was a gentleman scholar.
Mm-hmm.
but.
Well, he never seems to have challenged.
He never did challenge
Lazarson at all.
No, he never did.
He did a lot of research for him.
I called her old dude to his face. I said, "You're Earl's puppy dog."
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And whether or not he liked it or not, he didn't say anything. But he was a very nice person.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So maybe opposites attract.
Yeah.
But, and of course, Earl Beard was very smart, too.
Uh-huh.
Smart person.
He was our neighbor in Alton.
Oh, was he?
We lived in Alton for a while, and he was really handy, and he would help Norman do stuff. We lived in this old house.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And our daughter, little girl, was like 2 or 3, and she was always saying, "Now, Earl, you've got to stop smoking."
He never did.
No, he never did.
Never did.
Once he was putting in a toilet, helping Norman put in a toilet, and they went out to do something, and she peed in it before it was finished. So, and they used to drive to school together, and he told a lot of good stories.
Oh, really?
And yeah, he was a wonderful person.
He was a wonderful person.
Yeah.
He's a wonderful person to work with, too.
Yeah. Yeah. He probably left you to your own, when he thought you were competent, he probably just let you do your own.
Oh, I'm sure he did.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, uh-huh. I never reported her at all.
Uh-huh.
Beer. But I basically had a, you know, in the VP office.
Mm-hmm.
When he moved over. Well, he replaced Warren Joseph, I think.
Yeah, he did. Right.
But,
mm-hmm. Did you know him?
Yeah, I knew Warren. Warren was in VP and P office. Coachman was vice president and provost at the time.
Uh-huh.
And Warren Joseph was... let's see, he had...
He was dean of fine arts, wasn't he?
No.
No? Or head of the division?
Well, I don't know where he came from. He came from...
Music.
Music.
Mm-hmm.
But he was supposed to be reviewing the academic affairs budget for academic salaries and personnel matters.
Mm-hmm.
Well... I wound up one day with Annie Coachman saying, "Would you take over the responsibility of the academic affairs salary responsibility?" And Warren continued to be responsible then for review of paperwork for qualifications.
Okay.
So he and I occasionally did not see eye to eye on a few things that, regardless of whether we approved it and we haven't. Lazarson or whoever else at the time, it didn't go through.
Uh-huh.
I had a lot of informal power, I guess.
Yes.
In some of the jobs. And then in that job, I probably did, assistant to the VP and P.
Uh-huh.
I had direct access to MedCath, particularly at year-end of the budgets. When we had, even I and Jack Dorda and other people dumped a lot of money quite often.
Uh-huh.
A lot of money. I'd call up the various deans and say, "Send me requisitions for X number of dollars," and we'd go through that, and they'd get more. And we could spend state money very appropriately on behalf of the university for the students' benefit.
Uh-huh.
We did a good job. Of course, you couldn't afford to turn it back in.
No.
And we made sure it wasn't turned back in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, everything was for the institution.
Right.
So. And Darla and I did that for 3 or 4 years together with MedCalf's guidance.
Uh-huh. Mm. Well, what happened to Mr. Metcalf? I didn't even know he committed suicide.
Yeah, he did.
Because there's nothing like that in the records.
Mm-hmm.
It just says he died. And his obituary says he just died.
Well, what I know about him, I think Earl was getting to him.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And could be wrong, But I think Jim was drinking a little bit too much.
Uh-huh.
I'd known him for a whole bunch of years, and I think we were fairly close to each other. But
mm-hmm. He seems like he was a wonderful person.
He was.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, nice.
And, yeah, kind of like Jack Dart. Jack Dart, Libby called him Jack. And Jack went over and cleaned up the bedroom where Jim shot himself, unfortunately. But I don't really know. See, Jim had all kinds of time at the university. He could have retired.
Uh-huh.
I think he wanted, well, he had to be 55, I think.
Uh-huh.
I think he had about a month or two, but he had 30 or 35 years.
Uh-huh.
And but it is exactly why I don't know one of them, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I'm surprised to hear that he had an alcohol problem, because it seemed to me that during the Rendleman period, he was the one who didn't. Rendleman wanted to always have parties with alcohol around on the campus, and Metcalf wasn't in favor of that.
I think I think Jim had the problem when Earl came on board.
Uh-huh.
His top dog.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Oh, now, Jim and I, we went to parties with each other way before that.
Mm-hmm.
We played AAA. And we would go bowling. We basically went bowling, so we'd go up to the pizza place and eat and drink beer.
Uh-huh.
And that was basically the AAA parties. We'd get our, unfortunately, South Larry Taliana.
Yeah.
Me.
I wish he were alive.
Oh, yeah.
I think he probably knows a lot.
Oh, Jim would know a lot.
Yeah.
He worked his rear end off on the John Mississippi River Festival.
Yes.
Big burber card.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to make sure he knew all the facts and figures and money expenditures.
Uh-huh.
Which I don't really think he ever had to testify to, but
uh-huh.
He was doing whatever he could to protect John and the university.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He was very dedicated and loyal to this place.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe too much.
Uh-huh.
I think he came from Carbondale, I think. But,
did you have anything to do? I'm not doing too much on the MRF because the guy down in the archives is making this big CD about it. Yeah, I'm emphasizing more the other stuff. I want people to know other things about our university.
Right.
Did you have stuff to do with MRF, though?
No.
No? You weren't?
Well, with the one exception, that was one way we... The Academic Affairs budget purchased a big sound system one year. We purchased for Academic Affairs, but it wound up the MRF site.
Okay.
And I kind of griped about that, but I think it was Andy said, I don't worry about it, no one will ever find out, so.
Okay. Okay.
Of course, that was during the days of Bill Hudgens. You know Bill Hudgens, he's passed away now, too.
Yes.
He came up from Carbondale when John became president.
Uh-huh. Now, he was the political guy, wasn't he?
Bill
Hudgens?
No. Too much, huh?
Okay.
Maybe quasi.
Mm-hmm.
But he was more of an internal university man, too. The political guy was John for him. That was his.
Okay.
And I'm trying to think, when John was getting sick, who he wanted to be put in charge of vice president of administration.
Yes, that was his idea, to have a VP of administration.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that, 75, when he was getting ill.
Mm-hmm.
He started on
and
that.
And who was it, John? Well, anyway, I think John's view of the vice president for administration is that it would really be a political job.
Mm-hmm.
And the running of the institutional problem would be left to one of his underlings.
Uh-huh.
And he had somebody all picked out for that.
Well, we did. A politician?
No, the guy worked for the university.
Oh.
Like, I can't think who it was.
Hmm.
But anyway, he didn't. John wasn't successful in getting appointed. on the faculty. Everybody else turned the guy down, so. Are you going to interview any of the civil service people?
No, I've interviewed, let's see. I interviewed Jill Beatty.
Jill Bocco?
Yeah, because I wanted to hear about her East St. Louis and the machines they used and things like that. Mm-hmm. Who would you suggest?
You ever talked to Wilma Jean Bond?
No, I haven't called her. I've got to call her.
Whether or not she would, you know, she was the secretary for a bunch of years of the big guy on campus.
Yeah.
And John.
Uh-huh. Right.
Well, I got a list of them.
Through Nancy Wilson.
Yeah,
good. I'm glad you've got a list.
Let me look. Great. Because I was sitting down the other day. And
I'm interviewing Mary Rast. I'm not sure. Mary Rast. She manages the labs now. She might have come in later. But,
Okay, I got Jim Peebles, Jim Medcalf, Jack Darda.
Oh, Peebles. I have
Gene
his
Peebles.
Address.
Now, see, he
lives
somewhere around Carbondale.
Yeah, I have his address.
Medcalf has passed away. Jack Darda. He would be an interesting person to talk to.
Oh, good.
He living in Florida, however.
Oh, in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Arnold Meyer. He was the comptroller. Jim Johnson was my director of physical plant.
Uh-huh.
Charles McDonald was the...
Yeah, I've been playing phone tag with him. He gave me his card one day in Sacred Grounds, and then I called him, and then I emailed him, and then he called me back.
Mm-hmm.
And I called him back, and he wasn't home, and then he called me back, so I haven't got an appointment with him yet.
And you got Rich Madison, the University Center.
I'm interviewing Grace Madison. I guess I have to ask about
Grace.
Rich Madison.
Grace Madison.
Yeah.
Where's she at?
She's in Edwardsville. She was a student.
Well, okay.
Okay. I have to interview Rich Madison, yeah.
Helen Philibom?
Yeah, several have mentioned her.
Okay. Helen Morrow?
No. Helen Morrow.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
You've got a guy that used to run the transportation services, Harvey Bushrow. I doubt if he'd talk to you, though.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh. He might.
Oh. Okay. Well, maybe I'll try to get him. I think his daughter or somebody is on the faculty in School of Ed now. Julia Bushrow.
I don't know.
Okay.
And the only other one I had was Stan Kimball, which you already knew about, and he's passed away.
Yes. Right.
Of course, Jim Brown's passed away.
Yeah.
You already mentioned Wiley. Clarence Stevens is dead.
Yeah.
Coachman's in Florida someplace. Bruce Thomas has passed away.
Yeah.
Alice White's passed away. Anyway.
Yeah.
There were just some names I was thinking about.
Yeah, I'm going to call Helen Philibom.
She can
and
tell
Jack
you a lot.
Darda. You've really
Jack
mentioned
Darda.
Him. Darda.
He's, he and I, he called me his millstone.
Okay.
And I was director of supporting the service.
Uh-huh.
He was working for Medcalf. And when Earl appointed me as director of supporting the service, his daughter came to work for me.
Uh-huh.
And Meyer came and...
Mm-hmm.
Earl and Jack had a relationship. Letters, and I never could fathom it out, but they got along with each other.
Okay.
Every time Earl got mad at me, he'd go chew Jack out.
Okay. Dear.
And every so often, Jack would do a few things, and he'd come and say, well, Luther, you're just like a cat in a mill pond. I tied my millstone around your neck. You were splashing water, and I threw another millstone around your neck, so you're going to sink again. He was safety director when I was so-called director of supporting services. I have to remind him of this every year. Tornado warnings time appeared. And he wrote a memo to all faculty and personnel. And it basically says, this is tornado season. Do not expose yourself in front of the windows. Do not expose yourself in front of the windows. Carol Keene was the... Dean of the Humanities, she says, Luther, do you know what Jack wrote? She just started chuckling. I said, no, what did he do? do not expose yourself in front of the window. And I still remember that to this day.
That's a good story.
Oh, yeah.
Well, now, what about Chief McDonald? Am I going to get a good story from him, you think?
He probably will if he talks to you.
Okay, if he talks to me, he's been elusive. But
he had, I don't think his relationship with her was too good.
No.
Due to the fact that Rhea, he was one of Rhea Frider's men.
Uh-huh.
And Earl and Rhea didn't get along. And she hired him, and that's one reason I don't think. And of course, he had the security at the time, which is unionized.
Uh-huh.
And he had a combination of things like that occurring. And
he and Joe Vanzo didn't get along.
Who?
Joe Vanzo. Is it? No, what's his name? His last name?
John?
Is Vanzo, and he still works here. But anyway, I guess that's neither here nor there.
I don't know.
He was, I can't remember what was his job. I think they had an argument.
Bob Vanzo.
Yeah, Bob Vanzo. They had an argument over who was supposed to report to who.
Oh, okay. You know,
something like that. And McDonald was reporting to Earl Azarson, and Bob thought he should be reporting to him.
Oh, no. Okay. That's
in the files. That wouldn't go in the book or anything. Uh-huh. It's just.
And yeah, Chuck, if he could tell you some interesting stories.
Good. Well, I've got to get a hold of him then.
But I'll let him tell if you want to tell him.
Okay.
Because he could speak with much more authority.
Okay.
We were involved in a few things together. When I was director, he'd come up and tell me something. He'd say, Luther, don't tell anybody anything.
Uh-huh.
Until it happens, so. It happens, a few things happen, so we worked it out. But I'd prefer to be missing by him, if anything.
Okay. They're not ever good. No historian is ever going to be able to find out about this.
Probably not.
Okay.
Probably not worthwhile remembering.
Well, so you know, someone, this, you're creating a source, and a historian 100 years from now probably listen to it, and so.
Well, maybe.
Maybe.
That, all basically most of them involved around, we had the, you know, the list on everything, if something happened on campus, they were bound and determined it, so they could tell everybody off on the fire. We need to tell the students. No, they don't need to tell the students in case some young lady got raped.
Uh-huh. None
of their business.
Uh-huh.
And who got picked up for speeding, that's not necessarily none of their business.
Uh-huh.
I think now the Lestal is listing.
They're listing all the traffic.
Minor infractions.
Every time, mm-hmm, there's a big list.
Mm-hmm. So, but we got involved with a few things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, I said Earl didn't like the police,
mm-hmm,
so he wasn't smart, but he's a hard-working, intelligent man. It's a shame he was, mm-hmm, so nitpicky. Oh, well,
uh-huh,
that's another question.
Uh-huh.
I think from what I know about it, he was finally removed from president by the board.
Hmm.
You can only be president so long. Well, me and my job, I think that when I was there, the director of supported services, I think the average tenure was about 2.5 to 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I survived for about 4.
Mm-hmm.
So whether that's good or bad, or being stupid or incompetent, uh-huh, or what, I have no idea.
Mm-hmm.
But, interesting period, yep, of time.
Yes.
But I think the first part of the institution, the first years, was much more fun and more favorable.
Mm-hmm.
You had your arguments with people.
Mm-hmm.
You got a heck of a lot done, apparently.
Uh-huh.
And as we got older, we became more formalized, bigger, uh-huh, and you had more rules, and you had this, and you had unionization, and more, mm-hmm, and more people griping and moaning, so you had to formalize more things, and you lost a lot of the, what I'd call the, maybe a family sense way back from when,
uh-huh,
I quit. That, well, it probably couldn't have existed unless lost it. Mm-hmm. Things were very informal. Mm-hmm. Way back with them when they had the trapped houses.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And of course, me, myself, and I, and Jack Dart, we would have both been, had the university sued for sexual harassment many times. Helen Philobom, I'd go up and give her a hug. Betty Kraft, have you heard her name?
Yes, Betty Kraft.
She could probably tell you a few stories. Now, okay. I'm going to tell you this. If you talk to her, you can ask her.
Okay.
She was at one time a very shy young lady. Even though she married and had two kids.
Uh-huh.
And Jack and I knew it, and we worked in the same office.
Uh-huh.
And whenever we got tired of doing what we were doing, she was a receptionist.
Uh-huh.
We'd go out and lean against the door, our doorway, and start glaring at her. Her back was the worst. But you could just tell her she was starting to get fidgety, and she knew somebody was looking at her. And she finally turned around and we were bugging her. just because we knew we could.
Uh-huh.
And she finally got over her shyness.
Uh-huh.
She's a very nice young lady. Well, not a young lady, she's middle-aged lady, but Alma.
She's retired too, just very recently.
Not too much alone. Mm-hmm. She had, have you ever talked to her on the telephone?
No.
She was a telephone receptionist in the personnel office.
Oh, okay.
And you'd kind of enjoy calling the personnel office just to hear her answer the phone. That. Oh, no. Watch out.
So, what do you think was your biggest contribution to building the university?
I don't know.
Sounds like you did a lot of things.
Well, I think you
managed the money and got it distributed well.
Probably, or helped do it.
Uh-huh.
You didn't really do anything by yourself way back when.
Uh-huh.
You had a lot of help doing this and doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't really know what my biggest contribution was. I think I was a better administrator than I was an instructor.
Mm-hmm.
That I didn't particularly like teaching. Mm-hmm. Well, one of the reasons when I was teaching, I had class 125, 130, and you're
okay.
Not really teaching.
Mm-hmm.
When I was teaching at East St. Louis, we only had a class about 45 or 30
uh-huh.
people. And there were older people who were working. Mm-hmm. They were a little more interested mm-hmm. in hearing about a few things. When
mm-hmm.
I got up here teaching, you had regular income freshmen. And some of them wanted to pay attention, but this was the beginning class, and they all had to take it. They knew it, and all they wanted to do was take it and get out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't really do much with 125 students.
Mm-hmm.
And I was kind of amazed that it's kind of amazing when you give 100, when you, on your syllabus, you see you're going to give a 100-point test.
Uh-huh.
And you had to have 70%
mm-hmm.
to get a C.
Mm-hmm.
How many people ask you how many questions did they have to get right? That just amazes me. It still amazes me. Just amazes me. You know, you try to make it as simple as possible, and to get a C, you got to have 70. Right? It's just ridiculous. Well, I'm back to one more little incident. When I was director for supporting services, I was also the snow czar.
Uh-huh.
Why in the world we got that moved down to that level? Yeah, I know why. To protect the president. Because Buzz Shaw did that.
Uh-huh.
He brought in Rhea Friday's. He turned over that responsibility to her to close the campus. So I guess he could be protected. John Rendleman himself made that decision.
Mm-hmm.
He said that this is, I'm responsible, I'll be the one.
Yes.
Well, anyway, Buzz Shaw gave that to Rhea Friders, since she was in charge of physical
mm-hmm.
plant and make sure the roads and campus were all clean.
Uh-huh.
So when I inherited the job, I got that great responsibility.
From Earl Lazarson.
Yeah, Well, if you look back in history, you'll find there was one big snowstorm on this campus.
Yeah.
When the SOB director did not close campus.
Uh-huh.
And the campus was clear.
Uh-huh.
All the parking lots and all the roads on campus were clear, but all of a sudden the director of supported services was responsible for all the highways leading to campus.
Uh-huh.
That wasn't what the policy said. The policy said that if mm-hmm. you do not think it's safe to come to campus, don't come.
Mm-hmm.
Don't ask for somebody else to make that decision for you. Well, mm-hmm. anyway, I didn't close campus.
Mm-hmm.
We had a heck of a big snowstorm. I and a whole bunch of other people were here, particularly the people in the physical plant. The university was open.
Uh-huh.
The faculty senate, I think, commended the physical plant for doing a good job.
Uh-huh.
I think they said something kind of snide about me, but I'm not sure.
Oh.
But that's neither here nor there.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, all they had to do was, I think they changed the policy after that. But it was still the individual's responsibility.
Yes.
To go and to come to campus.
Mm-hmm.
And the odd, funny part about that, I got not too awfully many phone calls from students, mothers or parents, but the vast majority of the phone calls I got from was from parents of boys.
Uh-huh.
I never got a one from a female.
Hmm.
Mother. It was all from the males.
Huh.
Which you'd think would be just the opposite.
Right.
And I can still remember that. Now, why in the world didn't I get a phone call to tell me how dumb I was from some mother in behalf of her daughter? It was all from the... And I also got a... Well, this is... Oh, boy. Call from Bruce Thomas. He was not one Bruce Thomas, Bruce Rubin.
Oh, yes.
Bruce is a very nice guy. He's still living, by the way.
Yeah, I'm going to interview him. I have That's a good. Date to interview
okay.
him.
Okay. He can probably yeah. tell you a lot. He was one of the real old people. He was here before I was.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, he had a class that night, or whatever it was, Air Force. And he said, you know, I've got two Air Force officers up here complaining they had to go out in the snow for class. And I said, Bruce, only thing I can tell you, if they're in the damn Air Force, and this snow's bugging them, I'm sure glad, hope they're not defending my country in my behalf long. You can tell them that for me. He says, you want me to? And I said, yeah. Whether he did or not, I don't know. Well, my son was, he went to Raleigh. He was home that weekend. He had to come and get a haircut.
Uh-huh.
Little blonde friend over in St. Charles area. He really came to see his girlfriend.
Yeah.
But he came home to get a haircut. He had to drive all the way back to Raleigh that weekend. And anyway. But I was, if you look back to some of the faculty senate meetings, I was the gentleman censured for not closing the campus.
Uh-huh.
Maybe I should have.
I don't know. I think it's a huge, it's something people really worry about now. They have the inclement weather policy, and they have, you're supposed to listen to the radio. Maybe you had that then.
I think
supposed
that's
to listen to the radio
similar.
And yeah, and it always says it, but it's basically your decision.
Mm-hmm. It
uh-huh.
has to be. It has
yeah.
to be your decision.
Uh-huh.
And well, anyway, the campus was clear, and the roads in the campus were clear. Now, 157 and 159 were kind of crappy, I don't know why.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Yeah, well, it's very expensive to close the campus.
Mm-hmm.
So you can understand why you wouldn't do it.
I don't really want my motivation. Well, you know, I was here. I knew the campus was clear.
Uh-huh.
Parking lots were clear. Roads was clear. And I drove from where I live about 6 miles from campus between
mm-hmm.
here and Hamill. And I drove to work and all this slush and everything, so
uh-huh.
I didn't figure it was that bad, so.
Uh-huh.
Anyway. Yeah, but Bruce can give you a lot of tidbits of information.
Yeah.
How long are you going to take to write this book?
Well, I'll turn off that.
I have no idea what you should put in the history.
What would, if you were writing the history, what would you put in it?
I wouldn't write history in the first place. I'm not a very good writer. You know. Oh, just maybe basically probably what you're planning on doing.
Yeah.
This is supposed to be a book about memory.
Yeah.
Of course, a lot of the memories are based upon facts, which could be verified.
That's right.
And mm-hmm. There are some memories that can't be verified.
So. No, they're just feel how people felt about it and the mm-hmm. perspective they mm-hmm. had.
Well, mm-hmm. it's a great place. Probably still is. Mm-hmm. In a different way.
Mm-hmm.
That changed. You got dorms now.
Yep.
You got new people.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know who the dean of the School of Business is now.
Yeah, Gary Giammartino. I've never met him either.
That, and I'm sure the institution has similar problems like it had way back when.
Mm-hmm.
Probably thinks it does. Mm-hmm. As Jim Brown says, we bring a lot of our own problems on ourselves.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that.
And I don't know how long he was president.
Well, he was president and then he...
Retired
and then he came
and
back.
He came back and...
Mm-hmm. He was always...
But... He's right. We brought a lot of our own problems ourselves.
Uh-huh.
Well, we thought we had a lot of problems that we didn't have.
Mm-hmm.
Well, very good man. He was an English professor.
Yes.
And wound up a president of the university.
Mm-hmm.
Well, shall I leave you?
Well... let's see if I have one more thing to ask you about. I was going to ask you about what do you think about the university and the community around in the region? Do you think it's got a good reputation? Or is it...
I think it's better than it was.
Uh-huh.
I think way back when, we came in and took all this land.
Yeah.
Acres.
Mm-hmm.
That was kind of a black mark to start with.
Yes.
And... So I don't really think the City Fathers of Edwardsville and the surrounding community really looked at us too awfully favorably back mm-hmm. then. I think that's mellowed over some extent.
Uh-huh.
This is another one of my episodes with back when I was Director of Supporting Services. The City of Edwardsville, what was the gal lawyer's name, was bound and determined. Edwardsville put in a new sewer treatment plant.
Uh-huh.
And they were bound and determined that we were to close ours down and put all of our sewage
uh-huh.
under them, and they were going to charge us.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I didn't think that was the best idea in the world because they were going to charge us more, cost us to process it.
Uh-huh.
You know, I got in trouble with them on that. That may have inflamed a few things at a later date.
Uh-huh.
Also, Wagner, unfortunately, estate of repair. I had a few go-arounds with, I call it the Ocean Goshen Society, Madison County Historical Society. We were to completely renovate and repair all of those buildings.
Yeah.
Which they're doing that to some extent now by tearing them down and rebuilding mm-hmm. which we would have had to have done.
Yes.
It had an old lime mortar and an old soft clay brick.
Mm-hmm.
And they were just past their life expectancy.
Yeah.
You know, I had a few go-arounds with them, so that was maybe not the best thing in the world. But I really think the institution and the town are better
mm-hmm.
related with each other now. May not be true. I don't pay too much attention to this place and or the town of Edwardsville.
So you've got another life now.
I've got you just kind of walked away. And like Don Strickland said,
yeah.
He used to be the chairman of the Department of Management.
Uh-huh.
He said, when you left Luther, you just left. You left all of your books and everything else. I gave him my PhD robe and cap and walked off and left it. I didn't want all those dumb books. So maybe somebody wanted them, I don't know. Maybe they probably pitched them.
No, I doubt it. Someone's probably still wearing your robe.
They might be wearing my robe.
Yeah.
But, yeah, robes are expensive.
Yeah.
Yeah, this one by now, let's see, it's probably getting threadbare. But, been a whole bunch of years.
Yeah.
I've been retired a whole bunch. I've been retired more than a whole bunch of years. A lot of people retiring now. We go to some of these events and retired after 10 years service, retired after 15 years service, geez. Well, of course, my wife worked here too, so she retired there also. She worked in the service. She was a nurse.
My daughter's a nurse.
Oh, is she?
Yep.
But, well, I'm going to leave you.
Okay, well.